Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom and welcome to me. I am back here in the Holy Land. Just landed last night and, you know, still discombobulated. It is quite the quight to shift gears between Northern California and the West Coast of America and then coming back here. It's just a different life. It's just a different energy. And the human being is just not so geared towards, I guess he is geared, he or she is geared to making that kind of change. Still, though, it takes a little bit of time to get used to it, to get your sea legs or your land legs and your land of Israel legs. It's just a different thing. And I'm very, very glad to be back home. It's wonderful to see the family. And I had a great time in America. And at the last stop, I was at the Limud FSU conference, FSU standing for Former Soviet Union. We're going to hear more about that in the second half of the show today. And at the very end of my trip to Northern California, it was California, but then I went to Northern California. And I was in San Francisco area, the Bay Area, and I got to go to Facebook and WhatsApp. I got to actually go visit the campus, the Facebook HQ, the headquarters of Facebook. I got to do a little video there with the thumbs up sign at the entrance to Facebook. I was there. I even tagged Facebook HQ when I did a Facebook Live in front of Facebook. And on the one hand, one can just kind of discount it as, what is Facebook other than, you know, another company, another internet company? On the other hand, the ability to have any kind of organization that has 2 billion users a day means that this thing has tremendous world impact and power. And I tried to bring in a little bit of godliness into and spirituality into my time there. But also it was also a visitation to one of the capitals of the world today, one of the intellectual mind capitals, the capitals of what, and also financial capitals. And it was very important for me to be there to see see the atmosphere there, to kind of get a little bit of a grip on it. And I'm thankful that I had a chance to do that. And I haven't analyzed it all through in my head exactly what I saw, but I definitely saw bigness, grandness, and sharpness. And you know, as I'm walking around trying to sell and connect people to a site that's you know, a building that's 2,000 years old and tombs that are 3,500 years old, almost 4,000 years old, and that are kept in a decent and in some sense incredible fashion, that they've been kept up so well all these years, and yet still really doesn't have that sharpness and that fastness that Facebook has. It had a moment of like, there's always a moment to me where I'm like, Are we there? Are we there exactly where we're supposed to be? And when you go to a place like Facebook, it gives you a kick. It gives you a kick in the rear, and it says to you, you better get up to speed. On the one hand, what are you trying to do? Trying to sell the tumah, the patriarchs in Hebron and matriarchs, tumas and the mamas and the papas in Hebron as what? Some kind of newfangled thing? Of course not. You know, it's has stood this test of time, and it's got a depth in it that is not, you know, visually appealing. It's much more a spiritual depth. On the other hand, can we afford to have the world kind of pass us by when God has returned the Jewish people to Zion and is also creating Israel, recreating Israel as a startup nation? Shouldn't also these ancient sites that have so much spiritual value have the tools through which they can sell it and teach it in a modern way? I think it's very important to be able to do that. And I think it's important to be able to tell the Bible, tell the stories of the Bible, which are timeless stories, but it's also up to us to be able to retell those stories properly and to be, we are the facilitators, we are the agents of being able of passing over that information at this time. We have to do that as best as possible, if it's through the video platforms or if it's through Facebook or through, there are many great people who are teaching about Israel, but also about Torah, through the modern systems that have been enabled us to spread this far and wide. But we have to do it professionally. We have to look good. We have to keep it sharp. And of course, I hear my good friend Jack listening right now. I can hear him listening in. And my good friend Cynthia. I got a chance to see my good friend Cynthia as well. And it was a real pleasure to visit her, also in Northern California. Cynthia and Scott, it was great. And I can hear a lot of people that are my friends listening to the show and saying to me, we do have to keep it sharp. We do have to make it sharp. We have to make it very, very today without selling it out, right? Without cheapening it. But we have to be able to, we have to deliver it into the minds of today. We have to be aware of our generations and also aware of the technology is not some kind of foreign thing outside of God. It's a knowledge that God has released into the world. And so therefore we have to employ it as best as possible. But it's not easy. You know, it's not easy. For example, I just want to kind of, one dichotomy is that when you go to Northern California, it's very, very beautiful. It's very beautiful. And San Francisco is very beautiful. And the Bay Area and the whole Palo Alto and Mountain View and all that, where the high-tech hubs are. At the same time, the cities of San Francisco and Oakland are full of homeless people, and you're just shocked by how many homeless people there are. And it really degrades the atmosphere of the city and also just beckons the questions about where we are as a society. And it's a kind of conflict inside of itself, and maybe it reveals a conflict underneath it all. Certainly also, we know that those cities that I mentioned are also some of the capitals of the kind of Marxist thinking that has pervaded so many young minds today. Really, the capital of much of that thinking. Some people call it liberal, but I don't think that's a really fair word because we're all liberal. We're all into liberties. But some of the thinking that really has pushed forward the gay lobby, the homosexual lobby, and I'm not talking about now specific rights for individuals. I'm talking about this as a kind of the gender, transgender, that whole discussion has been pushed ahead by these very same places. That's why, in one sense, when I heard that Chabad has got some presence at Facebook, even albeit a small one, I thought that's very good because we have to influence these influencers. We have to be there as well so that some good messages go out through these incredible channels to the world. So yeah, when you're on a trip like that and then you land back here in Israel, there is you got to take a step back and kind of try to see the world that you know again through the lens of the people that you just saw in a faraway place. And as I've said before in the show, Western California, the Western Coast, is really the farthest west. It's the farthest place on the west from the land of Israel, and it's 10 hours difference. And those differences really are there's a distance between these two places, and yet there's a lot of Jews and a lot of people in the world are being influenced by this place. And those are some of my kind of thoughts, meanderings about the role of the light of Israel. Does it shine all the way to those places? And it must shine more. Speaking of those places, let's talk a bit about our Torah portion today, which is a very special one called Vayetze, which means that Jacob departed from Be'er Sheva and went towards Haran. And he is leaving everything that he knows is good and comfortable. We're, of course, in the book of Genesis, Bereshit. This is the Yishai Fleischer Show. And if I haven't told you, also, we're on the Land of Israel Network with many great shows. In fact, I listened to the Land of Israel Network when I was driving from Sacramento back towards San Francisco, and I just needed a shot of Eretz Yisrael. And there was Josh Haston. And he gave me a real boost and connected me. And I think that this network is doing that. It's using that great technology of podcasting to send out a beacon, a message of Israel, and keep you connected wherever you are. By the way, I want to mention my good friend Arthur out in Phoenix, who is now, he's taken yet another advice of mine. That's exactly what it is. It's advice. It's just an idea about how to stay more connected and plugged in. And he has put on the Tehillit. He's got Tchelis, got the blue string. He's a true blue Jew. Hashtag true blue Jew. That's right. When you get when you get your Tchelis, you got to write me an email and say you're now a true blue Jew. And he did so. And he's a blue string man. He's singing the blues. He's singing the Jewish blues. That was after he also took another piece of my advice, which is to put up a picture of the land of Israel somewhere in his house. And he showed me a picture of a great photograph he took of the Western Wall on the 9th of Av. And he took it, he developed it, and now it's up there beautifully in his house. So great job and congratulations on Tchelet. Tchelet, of course, is one of our sponsors of the show, Tchelet. In fact, as I'm doing the show right now, I got my talis on, I got my tefillin on, because I kind of got home and I have a chance to keep my tefillin on for a little bit longer. So Tchelet, Tchelet, Tchelet.com. All right. It's one of the great sponsors of our show. Jacob is running away. Remember last time we left off, we learned that Jacob has got to run away from his brother who is setting out to kill him. And he runs away. Now please let us delve into the situation that Jacob finds himself in. And the Bible may not actually, the Torah may not actually share these words with us, but just think about, kind of let's piece it together. Jacob, we know he's a man of tents, right? We learned that in the beginning that he's a man who's a tent dweller. He's comfortable at home, and he knows how to make soup, and his mom loves him. In other words, he's like a mama's boy, right? He's comfortable with his tents, with his soup, and he's not, as opposed to his brother, like a man of the field. And at the end of this Torah portion, we're going to see that Jacob becomes a man of the field, just like his father blessed him, right? He said, as I explained, that really it's a blessing when he said the voice is the voice of Jacob, but their hands are of Esav, of Esau. That's actually a kind of blessing, to have hands, right? To have hands, not just a voice. And here's another clue into that right now, right at the beginning. Jacob is leaving his comfortable house. He is leaving his tents. He's running away, and he finds himself totally by himself on a mountaintop. And the Medrash, the extra Jewish lore, tells us that in fact he was totally destitute, completely poor at this moment. Why? Even though he didn't leave the house poor, but what happened was is that Esav sent out one of his sons, Eliphaz, to kill Jacob. And when they met, you know, Jacob convinced him, how could you kill, you know, your uncle and also, you know, I'm Isaac's son, and this is not, you can't do this thing. So he says, okay, fine, you're right, but on the other hand, my father commanded me, how can I go against my father's will? So he says to him, well, take all my money. And we know that a person who's destitute is like as though he's dead. And he accepted that. And so therefore, Jacob finds himself without anything, away from his mom, away from his tents. And it says that he encountered the place and spent the night there because the sun had set. He took from the stones of the place, which he arranged around his head, and lay down in that place. So he's so alone and poor and broken. And remember, he now left his household, which he probably did not want to leave. He wasn't expecting that. He was expecting to get his father's blessings, and he was afraid to get a curse. But indeed, he probably thinks, yeah, I got a curse. Look at me now. Thanks a lot. I am now by myself on a hilltop. I have no money. I don't have a pillow. I mean, I don't have a tent. I don't even have a pillow for my head. And what does he do? He arranges rocks around his head so that animals won't kind of gnaw at it or won't come at it. And he's sleeping out there. Have you ever slept outside? Have you ever slept outside without a blanket and stuff? Have you ever slept outside? Let me tell you something. It is cold. It is cold no matter how cold it is. It could be in a warm summer's night. It's still not easy to sleep without any covering and kind of outdoors. It's scary. It's lonely. And he's by himself. And he's probably thinking to himself, what a jip. I totally messed it all up. I got my father's curse instead of a blessing. My brother wants to kill me. My mom says I have to run away. And here I am alone, alone. However, and he dreamt. And behold, a ladder was set earthward, and its top reached heavenward. Meaning to say, its feet were on the ground, right? V'hine sulam mutzav arza, a ladder it was like based on the ground. Urosho magia hashamayma, and its head reached heaven. Which is the dream of exactly what I said to you before about the voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau. He had the feet have got to be planted in the ground, but you have to have big, big dreams with your head in the sky. V'hine malachei Elohim olim v'yordim bo. Here are angels going up and down this ladder. What does that mean, angels going up and down the ladder? It means that there is an eternal connection between heaven and earth. He dreamt and he saw the continuous relationship between heaven and earth. Prayers going up, commands coming down, angels doing their work throughout the land and effectuating change. And that is as opposed to those people who might believe that there either is no God or that God had created the world and he has nothing to do with it. He kind of set it in motion. And those are both wrong. He sees a vision that God is indeed active in the workings of this world. That's really what the vision's about. And I think also in the vein that I was talking before about being at Facebook and WhatsApp, and WhatsApp, by the way, is a company that has, in a lot of ways, changed our life here in Israel, changed the way we communicate and relate to one another, and certainly get projects done through work groups, etc. Information, right, travels, the internet information travels in these packets, right, these packets of information, and they're flying across and reassembled in different places. And that's in a sense what the God's sending down of these angels going up and down. It's like packets of information are coming to different places, and we're sending our packets back up, and there's this like internet connection, this informational connection between heaven and earth. And he sees that, and God kind of stands upon him. He behold, God was standing over him, and he said, "I am Hashem, I am God, God of Abraham, your father, and God of Isaac. The ground upon which you are lying, to you will I give it, and to your descendants." And it is said that the whole land of Israel became folded underneath Jacob when God told him that this land that you're sleeping on the whole land of Israel. You know, there's two ways to understand that. Either the whole land of Israel shrunk under him, or maybe he grew to cover all of it, right? And he says, it continues, God says to him, now remember what I told you before, he's totally alone. He's totally broken. He's totally sad. Suddenly God reveals to him and he says to him, it's me, God. I am the God of, I am, you know, Abraham and Isaac that you thought maybe you got a curse from. I'm that God and I'm going to give you this land. And your seed will be like the dust of the earth. And you shall expand greatly. Which directions are they? The directions are westward, eastward, northward, and southward. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed by you and by your offspring. Meaning to say, you're going to expand greatly, and you're going to be a blessing to the world. I'm going to give you the land, your family's going to be big, and they're going to be a blessing for the world. Okay? It's a three-part kind of blessing. And he keeps going, God. God is telling him, this is a very personal dialogue. And he says to him, V'hine anochi imcha, and here I am with you. Me, God, I am with you. That's a lot. You could just stop right there. I am with you. Ushmarticha b'chol asher telech. I'm going to protect you in all of your sojourns, all your travels. V'ashivoticha el ha'adama hazot. And I shall return you to this land. And we'll see how that comes back to fruition in this week's Torah portion. Ki lo azavcha, I shall not leave you, ad asher im asiti, not until I have fulfilled asher dibarti lecha, which I have spoken to you. I'm going to be with you. I will be with you. I'm going to take you all the way. I'm going to bring you all the way. there and back. I'm going to be with you in your sojourns and your ups and your downs. I'm going to be with you. Remember, again, just picture this. Jacob, broken man by himself. He thinks he has a curse, and instead God says to him, I am with you. And God, now that was God's talking. Now Jacob's going to wake up. Vayikatz Yaakov mishnato, he wakes up, and he says, Vayomer, achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. Indeed, there is God in this place. Vanochi lo yadati, and I didn't know. I didn't know that in this real world there's going to be God. I knew there was God in the tents of Torah when I was with my holy father with studying the Torah in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever. Right, he spends time, although the Bible doesn't tell us, but the Jewish information shares with us that he also spent time learning with the Shem, one of the first human beings who had knowledge of the Torah, and his son Ever. And so, I thought there was Torah when I was just in yeshiva, with my father's house in the tents. Now I see that even when I'm out here alone, broken, and that I have to actually go to exile, God is with me. He's taking me on this journey, and there is God in this place. And this is God. There's also God in a place when you're, I think on a psychological level, when you're down. God is also with you when you're down, not just when you're up. Sometimes we think that, when we feel good and everything is right, we're like, God is with us. But he's also with us when we're down, when we're broken. And he keeps going. And he says, Vayar Vayomar. And suddenly he got afraid. Ma nora hamakom hazeh. How awesome, or how awful, right? But awe is this place. Ein ze ki im beit Elohim, v'ze shar ha-shamayim. This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of the heavens. Right? So he identified the place. Not only did he identify that there's a God in his dream, and there's a voice, and there's a message, and there's a destiny, he also recognized that the place that he was at, and that place was the Temple Mount, and it's a little bit tricky. Was he in Beit El, which is not Jerusalem? How is it that he at the same time is identifying the place as the gate of the heavens, in the house of God and the gate of the heavens? And that is because the Temple Mount is a jumpy mountain. I've explained this before. It has jumped to different places, including Mount Sinai, Mount Carmel, and in this case to Beit El, where later it's going to be called the house of God. And so he recognizes that the place itself is a portal, an opening, a gateway to the heavens. And he understands that it has something to do with the place itself. And it's kind of ironic where he said, I didn't know there was God here. And not only is there God here, this is the gate to God. And that's the truth about the land of Israel, is that sometimes there's darkness, there's things that make us think. I'm sure when Mark Twain traveled through the land of Israel, when he wrote what he wrote, it was as though it was a totally dead and lifeless thing. There's no God here. It's just old stories. But indeed, there is God here, and there's what on the surface seems like a dead and lifeless thing is in fact supercharged with the way to communicate with God. And it says, Vayashkem Yaakov baboker. Jacob woke up in the morning. Vayikach et ha'even asher sam mirashotav. He took the stone that he put around his head. Wait a minute, it was stones, plural, and now it's a stone. Something's changed here. And in fact, that stone, which was 12 stones earlier, has now become united into one. Vayasem ota matzeva, and he made that stone into a pillar. Vayitzok shemen al rosha, and he poured oil. He anointed it. He put it on its head. The stone now has a head, right? Al rosha means on the top of it, but in fact, it has a kind of head. And maybe that's because it not only does it have a head, but it's also it comes from the word like initial beginnings, because we know that the foundation stone, the stone of the Temple Mount, is the place where everything is initiated, the world was initiated from. Vayikra et shem ha-makom ahu Beit El. And he called that place Beit El, the house of God. V'ulam, however, Luz, Shem Ha'ir L'Rishona, it had a different name, Luz, earlier. And everybody that lives in, I lived in Beit El for many years, and I can tell you that we're all very happy that they changed the name from Luz, because the people that live in Beit El didn't want to be known as losers. And so instead now it's called Beit El, which is the house of God, a much better name than loser. But by the way, there is a town next to Beit El called Jilazun, which is an Arab name, and we think that that is one of the relationships to the ancient town of Luz that was there. And the word Ve'ulam, we'll find it exactly four times in the Torah, and I don't have the space in this conversation today to explain exactly how, the other places, maybe a different time. But the word Ve'ulam means really that, it means like however, but it also means that something has been uncovered, something has been revealed. Yes, you thought the name was Luz. It had a kind of earthly name called Luz, but no, it's not a Luz at all. It is indeed Beit El, and Jacob was kind of a person who was able to uncover. And if we think about what we've read so far, it's really an uncovering of a kind of, he saw, he said, I didn't know there was God here. Oh yeah, this is the gate of the heaven. He uncovers the reality that underneath it all is something very, very great. And so Jacob has that power. He's got these eyes that can see past what we see today and see something great. And that's indeed very, very necessary for the Jewish people to be able to turn this very earthly world into one infused with spirituality. In any case, now that he got this message, Jacob is now ready to go. He's ready now to go to exile. He's actually armed for exile. And he also is armed with faith, right? With, and I mean, even not just, you know, faith in God, but also God kind of said to him, it's going to be okay. I'm going to be with you. And you're going to need that faith because you're going to 20 years of exile. 20 years, reminiscent of 2,000 years. He's going out there. He's going out there to work. And he's going to encounter a very unpleasant reality of Laban, right? And this man is his family. And yet, there's something about Laban, which is Laban, which is cold. We're going to get to Laban in just a second. First, he gets out there finally to Haran, right, where a lot of things happen for the Jewish people. That's where Rivka was found. That's where Abraham came from. That's where Rivka was found. Now Jacob is going to that very same family, and he's going to see Rachel. And the minute he sees Rachel, he's going to give her a kiss, and he's going to lift up a giant stone that is blocking the water source for all of the sheep herders. He's going to do it kind of in one by himself. He becomes super powered when he sees Rachel, and maybe that's because there's really two people. There's Clark Kent. His name is Jacob, Yaakov, and then there's the Superman. His name is Israel. Where he's going to get that name later, not even in this Torah portion. But he when he sees Rachel, he really sees the rest of Jewish future. It says that he kind of looked heavenward, and he cried. He cried kind of bitterly. Some people say because he saw her death, but you know what he really saw? He saw love. He saw love, and he saw Jewish destiny. And indeed, this is the Torah portion where Jewish destiny is going to be fulfilled. Jacob is going to marry Rachel. He's going to try to marry Rachel, but instead he's going to be given Leah, and then he's going to marry Rachel. They're going to get also the handmaidens, and they're going to give birth to 11 children in this week's Torah portion, 11 sons. And those 11 sons are going to be, the 12th son is going to be Benjamin. He's going to be born in the land of Israel in next week's Torah portion, that's going to be when Rachel gives birth to Benjamin and indeed dies here, where I'm close to where I'm standing in the town of Bethlehem. I'm right next door in the town of Ephrat right now. The point that I want to say to you is that Jacob is going to go into, he's going to go into exile in the most profound ways. He's going to work really hard for 20 years. He's going to be dreaming of sheep. He's going to figure out ways to make money through the colored and spotted sheeps and goats, and he's going to figure out how to do animal husbandry and how to become wealthy through creating, speaking of Facebook and WhatsApp, he's going to learn how to make a lot of sheep, right, and goats, and he's going to be out in a different world dealing with dark people, people who Lavan is this, you know, schemer, this eternal tricker, who doesn't give you rest and respite. And you get the feeling, and there's going to be also a family feuding. There's going to be this tension between these two beloved sisters. These incredible mothers of the Jewish people are also going to be kind of at each other's throats, and they're going to be jealous of one another. And that jealousy is going to also, ironically, build the Jewish people, because they're going to keep wanting to outbirth, have children, which shows the love to earn the love of Jacob, and to be the victorious and more powerful wife, the more important wife. Ironically, that tension is going to build the Jewish people through these children who are going to be the 12 tribes. But he has a life of no peace, and he's going to say that to Laban, to Lavan. He's going to say, you know, I frost bit me at night, heat dried me in the day, and I had no rest. I barely slept for the past 20 years. I've had so much tension. And you, Lavan, have been tricking me, have been a trickster, and have been a person who's kind of a charlatan, a person who you have no peace with. You have no peace with this Lavan. And by the way, I want to take a parenthesis here for a second and say, I resent it sometimes when people are not friendly to one another here in the land of Israel, when you say hello to people and there's like a kind of coldness. God brought us to this land to love one another and to give each other a little bit of peace, and not just to make it, to survive. And there's something about Jews which is always running, wanting to succeed and wanting to get things done. And we need to sometimes give each other that embrace, that hug, and that say hello, and give each other the feeling that life is more than number crunching and getting it done and being upwardly mobile. But it's a little bit of that. We have to give each other that nachas, that little bit of consolation, because life is tough. But Jacob didn't have any of that consolation. And I wanted to get to really this part, which is the part where God calls Jacob back. And we're going to skip a little bit. And it's going to be all the way till when Joseph is born. So Jacob is going to be very successful in his business dealings, in his animal husbandry knowledge. And the man became exceedingly prosperous, and he attained flocks, maidservants, servants, camels, and donkeys. And he heard the words of Laban's sons saying, Jacob has taken all that belongs to our father, and from that which belonged to our father, he has amassed all his wealth. Jacob also noticed Laban's disposition. Behold, it was not towards him as in earlier days. And Hashem said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and your native land, and I will be with you. Right? So suddenly God returns to Jacob, and he says to him, okay, it's time for you to go back to the land of Israel. Jacob sent and summoned Rachel and Leah to the field. Remember, by the way, that's the field is where his father Yitzchak was walking out of when he prayed, and then he saw Rebecca, right? The field is this place of spirituality. It's this place of connectivity to God. And he sent and summoned Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock. And he said to them, I have noticed that your father's disposition is not towards me as in earlier days, but the God of my father was with me. Now you have known that it was with all my might that I served your father, yet your father mocked me and changed my wage 100 times. But God did not permit him to harm me. If he would stipulate, speckled ones shall be your wages, then the entire flock bore speckled ones. And if he would stipulate, ringed ones should be your wages, then the entire flock bore ringed ones. Thus God took away from your father's livestock and gave them to me. It once happened that at the mating time of the flock that I raised my eyes and saw in a dream, behold, the he-goats that mounted the flock were ringed, speckled, and checkered. And the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob! And I said, here I am. And he said, raise your eyes if you please and see all the he-goats mounting the flocks are ringed, speckled, and checkered, for I have seen all that Laban is doing with you. Right? So meaning this all means that really God was like, I get it. Your father-in-law is trying to cheat you, but I'm going to help you out and you're going to get what you deserve. Right? And this is one of my favorite verses in the whole Torah. Okay? This is one of the big ones for me. Here we go. It's chapter 31, verse 13. I am the God of Beit El. Let me read that in Hebrew because I get so excited about it. Anochi Ha'el Beit El. I am the God either of Beit El or I am the God Beit El. I am the God, the house of God. Asher Mashachta Shama Tzevar. Where there you anointed a pillar. Asher Nadarta Risham Neder. There you took an oath. Ata, now. Kum, get up. Tzemina aretz azot. Leave this land. Veshuv eretz moladetecha. And return to your homeland, your birthland. Why is this important? Why do I get so excited about this verse? Because this is when God identifies him with the land of Israel. He says, I am the God of Beit El. I think it's because also I lived in Beit El for many years that this had impact on me. He said, I am the God of Beit El. Right? You're out here in New York City. You're out here in Palo Alto. You're out here in LA. You're out here in Phoenix. But I am the God of Beit El, and it's time for you to come back to Beit El. I am the God of Beit El, and I'm ready for you to come back. And he says this to his wives, and the wives say to him, let's go, man. They say to him, absolutely, it's time for you to go back. If that's what God has told you, it's time to go back. And basically, they're going to run. They're going to run away, and yet Laban is going to kind of chase after them. They're going to meet. And at that meeting point, they're going to come to some kind of detente. And that detente is some kind of peace understanding. And they're going to build a wall. And they're going to say, you know, don't cross over this wall. And I won't cross over this wall. And Laban says to Jacob, you know, you have to treat my daughters right. You can't kind of take wives above them. You got to treat them right. But basically, Jacob is going to have, in this one Torah portion, is going to be broken in the beginning, right? Poor and destitute. God reveals himself to him. He says to him, you're going to go on a tough journey, but I'm going to be with you. He goes on a tough journey. He gets married, right? In the end, he's married to two women plus two handmaidens. So that's a whole lot of wives. That's a whole lot of family that's going to come out of that. There's going to be infighting. There's going to be challenges. God is going to come to him after 20 years. He's going to say, it's time for you to go back home. And the wives are going to say to them, absolutely. He's going to face again Laban as he's running away from him. He comes to an understanding with him. And then finally, the last verse is that Jacob comes back to the land of Israel. And he says that Laban woke up early in the morning. He kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. And Laban went and returned to his place. Jacob went on his way. The angels of God encountered him. Jacob said when he saw them, this is a godly camp. So he called the name of the place Machanaim, right? A camp of God. That's it. He's kind of done with his long sojourn in exile. And now he's coming to the land of Israel. And he greets those very angels that he saw. They kind of departed from him when he left the land of Israel. And new angels of outside of the land of Israel met him. Now he's coming back. He sees the angels of the land of Israel. However, if Jacob thinks it's going to be all good times in the land of Israel, he's got another thing coming, and there's going to be many, many challenges to Jacob. In fact, Jacob's life is full of hard challenges. And that's another question that we really have to ask ourselves. You know, what is the lesson of Jacob's hard life? But in all that, God is with him throughout. And that's a lesson for us as well. As I said to you in the beginning, that when we're up, surely God is with us. But when we're down, that's when we doubt it. And the truth is God is with us as well. And we have to have God. It's specifically in those down moments where we have to hold on to faith and to understanding and to trust and to have God and fill out those dark places in our lives. That's a real test. It's easier to there's a test in being rich as well when you forget to thank God when you're in success. And I myself sometimes, you know, like whenever I have a success, I'm like, yes. And immediately like something clamps down and says, but don't forget to really thank God. Don't do not ascribe that success to yourself. It's also important to also not subscribe failures to ourselves, and to let God come in to be with us in those dark moments when we're down. Folks, I want to play an interview that I did in San Francisco, and actually in Oakland. Very important. We're going to learn about a new movement for American Jewish teens called the Club Z Teens. We're going to hear all about that in just 1 second. And I also want to remind you that we have our great sponsors. Of course, the Land of Israel Network, great sponsor, which is the host of this show, and really a wonderful program network. And I want you guys to be part of all of our great shows. And I want to thank also the good folks at Tchelet.org. We talked about that already today, Tchelet. Also, our good friends at JBrick, right, making amazing Jewish Lego. And I have a big dream of making a Ma'arat HaMachpelah Jewish Lego set. So I hope my friend Yitz is listening. We're gonna push to get a Ma'arat HaMachpelah, a giant one. That would be awesome. And our good friends at Janglo, Janglo.net, is doing a great job at informing us about what's going on in the Land of Israel so that we could make it here. And Janglo.net, as opposed to Laban, is a smiling, embracing organization. And it helps you really feel together with other people who can share with you and commiserate and give you that sense of love, and also help you find what you need. And of course, if you ever feel lonely, please come to Hebron, to Hebron, to the mothers and the fathers. Really, all these stories, all these people that we're talking about, they are there and they are waiting for you to visit them. Check out HebronFund.org, HebronFund.org, for our weekly tours. And stay tuned right now. I got a great interview for you with Russian Jews, right, of the former Soviet Union, who are making a tremendous difference in America and connecting America, Russian Jews and American Jews, to the Land of Israel. Guys, God bless you wherever you are. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. And here we go with an two amazing women who are making a difference for you.
Who are we as a people? Who are we as a nation? What does it mean to be a Jew in the Land of Israel, as a Jew in Judea? What is our message to the world? We're finally back in our land, and we get to ask these questions.
Ezrat Hashem, we're going to make Judea and Samaria an issue for the entire world to know that the Jews have a place in the world.
Israel Inspired with Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from San Francisco to the world. You're part of it wherever you are. Shalom and welcome. Yes, I know, San Francisco, that's not exactly Jerusalem or Judea or Hebron. So how is it that we're going to talk about the issues that matter to us here on this show? We're in San Francisco. Isn't it this, like, totally liberal left bubble, anti-Israel? Isn't this where Berkeley and Stanford are? And what else? All the stuff that happens, like all of the organizations and movements that are related to anti-nationalism, anti-family, anti-God, and therefore all anti-Israel. Aren't they all based here? What are you doing there, Yishai? Well, the truth is it's not quite like that, it turns out. It's a little bit more interesting and mysterious. And I have been coming out to California now for the last 2 years. And more I'm interested in what's going on in Los Angeles and San Diego, and here in San Francisco. Now, my good friend Masha, she invited me out here she pushed me to come out here to this Limud. What is Limud? Limud is this international conferencing on Jewish education, and it's all over the world. There's a division of it which is called Limud FSU, Limud of the former Soviet Union. Being of parents and descent of the former Soviet Union, it's a very natural place for me. In fact, I gave a talk yesterday, a debate, debating a left-wing Knesset member from Israel, Yossi Yona, from the Labor Party, from the Zionist Union Party. And I was like in a strange land, because suddenly I was looking at secular Jews in America, and yet they were loving my more nationalistic positions. How could that be? Well, that has something very much to do with the Russian story, the Russian background, and the way that the Russian mind has developed. And here in San Francisco, this Limud, which has been on November 17th through 19th, in Oakland, the Oakland Marriott, is a type of revolution. A first-time event here, 800 participants from the Russian Jewish community in this region. So that's been Limud. On top of that, my good friend Masha, who invited me to Limud, is also the director of Club Z, a movement trying to bring Zionism and Judaism to teenagers here in North America. And that itself is a kind of revolution. Again, does this have anything to do with the Russian mindset? We'll find out because Masha's with us. Masha, shalom.
Shalom, Ishai.
So great to be with you here in Oakland.
It is a wonderful sunny day.
It is a wonderful sunny day. Listen, how big is this Limud thing? I know that you and I have been in contact for years. And I've been kind of coming out here and trying to understand a little bit and finding these little nuggets and groups of Jews, pro-Israel Jews. You're involved with almost every pro-Israel Jews in this whole, you know, Bay Area, including in Berkeley. Tomorrow night, hopefully, we'll be visiting the Berkeley campus and hearing the great speaker, Hen Mazik. But tell me about this Limud, this gathering of Jews. This was very surprising.
Limud is an amazing organization to begin with, and of course us Russian Jews, we had to updo everything. And so about 10 years ago, I believe, Limud FSU was born, and it is something that people look forward to, something that people go to, something where people find their mates, and something where Jewish learning among Russian Jews actually has meaning. Actually, people stand in line. Their rooms are full. And we talk about real things, nationalistic, as well as just good Torah study.
Right. So there was that. There was also other things. There was also,
Absolutely.
Let me just explain.
We love us a good party.
That's right. It was a giant conference with many, many classes happening simultaneously. Hundreds of people are here, 800 participants. But the whole theme was, it's about Jewish and Israel, and it's a big kind of like session for people to come in and plug in. In a sense, it's a little bit of a pilgrimage. It's like a retreat. It's a little bit, even a little hippie-ish. There's a feeling a little bit like it's a kind of like Russian Woodstock here, you know?
Right.
There was an element of that, was that not?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that was a lot of fun. I want to thank you so much for inviting me here.
I'm so glad you came.
Yeah, it opened my eyes. And just another funny thing that happened to me, I offered different classes. I gave like a list of five different classes. So I knew that they would take the, five alternatives to a two-state solution and the debate. But I also had a class about Jewish sexuality in texts through three stories of mirrors. I find that people were at that session. There were a lot of people at that session. And throughout the time, like, people were really very connected to the stories, the Jewish stories, the issue. I find that there's a lot of hunger here for traditional Jewish values and texts. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think also too, Russians, we're especially those that actually came from former Soviet Union, religion was the opium for the masses. And so there is this hesitation. There is this like, don't try to convert me. I don't really want to know about Judaism, but yet I'm curious. And so Limud presents this really good platform for people that are curious, but they don't want to be quote-unquote converted.
Right.
And so it's like they taste it. They dip their toe in the water, and they go, okay, you know what? This is actually a lot more interesting. There is a lot more for me. So before I go and become a Buju, or before I go
a Jewish Buddhist.
Right. Or before I do something else, why don't I actually explore my own roots, my own heritage? Who am I?
And you're totally right. It's a safe kind of space here where you're not like in some kind of like, Kiruv, bringing you closer to Judaism in a hard way. This is like, let me experiment. Let me taste it. Let me see if it's smart. That's another thing about Russian Jews, that they're generally intellectual. And that reminds me of exactly the issue that you're specifically dealing with, which is the Jewish teens. I gave a class to your group of Jewish teens, and you were one of the main organizers of a whole set of programs here for the teens. Am I right?
Right.
So before I ask you about that, just one of the things that I noticed about them was that they were just sitting there, open-eyed and curious, listening and taking in. And that is a character trait which you do not often find amongst teenagers. I gave a class at EULA, at the Yeshiva University of Los Angeles High School for Girls. They were great. But they were fidgety and kind of excited and talking. I had to be very entertaining in order to keep them entertained. But your students, your teens here were, how should I say, more cerebral. Do you agree with
right,
that?
Right, right. They like to analyze. I mean, it's a combination of being from, you know, Russian parents, Russian Jewish parents, and also Silicon Valley, where you know how to sit and listen and to really sort of like be analytical about it and be scientific about it, if you will. But I also think one of the reasons everybody was super excited to come and hear you, the teens, because they came right off the debate and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to go listen to this guy, because they heard things from you that they don't hear from, you know, up on a stage.
Like what?
The Jews have a right to the land, that we should be strong, that we should not be apologizing. The political correctness it permeates their entire beings from kindergarten on. And so they are so used to always think of the other. I mean, those are all great things, but sometimes you just have to think of yourself. And when
you have to be an advocate for yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and this happens to me a lot, that people will start asking me a lot about the Arabs. And I'll say to them, you know, I'm not here to represent or be the advocate for the Arabs. Or they'll ask me a lot about American Trump and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, I'm here as a Zionist. I'm here to tell you about Israel and not to talk about American issues. I'm sure I have, you know, what to say, but that's not really what this is about. And you're right, it kind of recenters them. Anyway, it was awesome. On the one hand, I found them to be very, very highly intelligent and interested and attentive and cerebral. At the same time, when I asked them, what can you tell me about Hebron, what can you tell me? They were unable at first to identify that it's the seat of the burial of the matriarchs and the patriarchs of the Jewish people, which is a fundamental point.
Right.
I find that a lot out there. And, you know, and I had to start with them from a really the foundational level, which I also at the same time was very thankful for, because I said, me, I'll be the foundation, what I'm saying to them, not what the other guy is going to say to them. Right.
Absolutely. And I was talking to the teens afterwards, because I was wondering, did they actually get it? Did they actually follow the lineage? And they were like, yeah, that was super, super interesting. This was it finally sort of like click for them.
I find that a lot of times in the Jewish world, we don't take things a little bit slowly to build the very basis. A lot of times, it's a little bit like Tetris. Remember Tetris? And like, I got piled on at the top very quickly, but the foundation can be a little bit weak. So a lot of times, I like to go back to really like, I know that I never in my whole Jewish career got anybody to explain to me the Jewish history, how it progressed calmly and kind of didactically. And so I think that builds a foundation.
Right. I'm thinking of adding the whole story to our timeline that we have.
You have to have
every year.
Yeah, timeline's very important. Timelines are very, very important. Okay, so great. You were talking about Russian Jewry. You were talking about Limud. We're talking about Limud FSU here in Oakland. We're talking about the Bay Area, the liberal side to it. On the other hand, the kind of scientific, the high-tech world that exists here, the analytical, the kind of, you know, the really there's an edge of science and technology that's happening out here. You're dealing specifically with the teens. You started an organization. Tell me the name and what exactly your organization is doing and why you started it.
So the name of the organization is Club Z, and Z stands for Zionism, of course. You know, the organization started quite by accident. I was looking for a program to educate teenagers before they get to college. I think we spent communally, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, probably, on various campus organizations to help them educate our students and to help them be fighters for Israel and to stand up for Israel. I come from healthcare, and I think that prophylactic things are a lot easier and cheaper and make a lot more sense. So why don't we prepare our high schoolers before they get to college and give them context, history, and being able to articulately express themselves as proud Zionist Jews.
Permission. That's a permission. So they have to feel permission to be passionate, permission to say, damn it, I'm right. I have every right to defend myself. I have every right to this thing. That's a kind of permission mode that a lot of people don't have. Nobody tells them you have permission to say, this, you know, this is mine.
Right.
And I have a right to it.
Right, absolutely.
It's like a little switch.
Right. I think for 20, 30 years, the only two Jewish values that were put on a pedestal among the American Jewish community were tzedakah and tikkun olam. And everybody's a tikkunalistas, and we all talk about social justice. Well, where is the justice for the Jews? Where is the justice for us? We, you know, when the airplane, when they give you instructions, they always say, put the mask on yourself first, then put the mask on your kid. There's a reason for it. You can't help somebody if you're weak. And so I want to raise a new generation of Zionists who are proud, who are compassionate, who are impassioned to help others, but who also have the roots and the stamina to withstand the storm.
Right, and inoculated
right.
from what they will face on campus. All right, we have one of the parents of your the Club Z. And do you have a website, by the way? I missed that. Do we have a website we follow?
We do have a website.
Yes?
Thank you. It's Club Z for Zionism, teens for teenagers, clubzteens.org.
Clubzteens.org. It sounds like one of these new movies for teenagers. Club Z Teens. That's right, Club Z Teens. We're going to take this country by storm, America by storm, and really inoculate and prepare and give birth to the new generation of pro-Israel and Zionist Jewish youth. And it's so important. Remember, folks, the real storm here is not just social justice, it's assimilation. Here you can also fall in love with your identity and stick to it. So speaking of that, you're the founder, fine. But what about parents and how do they really see their children going in this direction? And do they want that? Or is it a cult? Or is it, I don't know what. We have with us Maria Rutenberg. And Maria is a proud parent of two wonderful, smart twins. There's more, right? But I saw it anyway. My class is two, I think, smart very smart, sharp, and very beautiful twins who were with us at the event here at the Oakland Marriott at the November 17th through 19th Limud FSU conference, but we especially for teens. Maria, tell me a little bit about this, about where we are right now and the atmosphere that you think that your the two daughters that I met are being raised in, why you directed them towards Club Z.
Hi, Ishai. Yeah, I was very excited to be here. This is my first time at FSU, because it's the first time it's on the West Coast. I brought my kids, which was a great idea. And the most exciting thing for me was that the whole thing was about Israel, which is so unusual. We American Jews shy of the word Israel. It's all about Judaism. It's all about religion. It's not about nationality. And for us, Russian Jews, nationality comes before religion.
I got to stop you right there. You've said something that's so it's hard for people to understand what you're saying. But I've been trying to make this point. Russian Jews identify ethnically. We were in Russia, we were identified ethnically. We understand ourselves as being an ethnic people. When I asked, the first question I asked your daughters and the rest of the teens is, are we a religion or a peoplehood? And they all got the idea that we are a peoplehood and a family. And it came to them very naturally. I wonder if I asked American, regular, you know, Anglo-born American Jews, if they would think that. I think that they would think we're a religion. I saw in England that certainly people identify as a religion and not an ethnicity.
And that's a big difference between us and the rest of the Jewish world, if you will, in diaspora. Because for us, we have to be united around Israel. For us, Israel has much more importance than Judaism or a book or anything else. And that's a big difference in this organization. And that's why I'm so grateful for the chance for my kids to participate in it. They finally got to see what a great project Israel is. And like somebody said, this is the most exciting project that Jews had in the last 2,000 years.
I don't know. I think I remember who said that. Go ahead, yeah?
And for right, my
is
kids...
That a, is that an important phrase?
This is the key phrase for me right. in this gathering. And for my kids, that was an eye-opener. Because they... And like Masha said in one of the meetings, we don't like to build advocates for Israel. We would like Israel to be part of our kids.
Right.
And once it becomes the part of themselves, they stand up for themselves. They don't stand up for Israel anymore. And that's the ultimate goal of Masha's movement, which is making a huge difference in the Bay Area. They finally are growing to be proud human beings, and Israel is part of that being for them.
It's funny to me that this Masha's movement, Club Z Teens, clubzteens.com?
.org.
Okay, good. .org. Buy the com also. And have it forward. Anyway, it's ironic that it rises up like a beautiful flower in the desert or a beautiful flower in the swamp or something. It's ironic
that this kind of more robust identity movement that is kind of no apologies is rising up specifically in a place where kind of there's considered, and I think it's true, really one of the bastion of the, what are we talking about, the anti-Israel movements, for if they are the New Israel Fund, if they are Breaking the Silence, JVP, no, the other one, the SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine. So you know, all that sits here, and the Hillel community that is on campus here is one that invites them all the time. Yeah, so specifically in this place rises up this kind of movement. That's kind of is it because of a reaction to this or coincidence?
It's kind of a variety of factors. If you think about Russian community in the Bay Area, it finally came of age. Because we started as a poor immigration, and now 25 some years passed, we're finally successful and we're ready to have our own voice. And it did come out of desperation too, if you will, because we are surrounded by leftist movements and very powerful left voices like Jewish Voice for Peace and maybe a plethora of 20 others. And we figured that if we don't teach our kids now, somebody else will. So we had to come up with something, and Masha was the leader for us, and she united a lot of different movements and ideas and put them together in action.
Mm. That is fabulous. That gives us hope. It gives us hope because a lot of times, you know, people want to write things off. Of course, when you come to a place like San Francisco that other people have written off, you're like, it's not exactly what you would think. It's more complex. And by the way, there's this, you know, there's a few kosher restaurants now that are popping up in town, and there is a burgeoning Jewish identity. I met some of the rabbis, and I think there's another impact, which is there are places here like Twitter, like Google, like WhatsApp, like Facebook, and they are also idea leaders in this world today. Maybe the idea leaders, maybe the most powerful movements, machines. They're much more powerful than governments, right? And to be able to influence them, because a lot of the people that we're talking about at this conference and these teens that are growing up here, they very well may be working in just a few years at these companies. What do you think about that?
Well, we were lucky to have a lot of participants from a tech world here, and we get to hear their individual perspectives. And you'll be surprised that there's a dissent in the companies too. I know in Amazon there was a huge outcry about the whole liberal environment, how few people came out and said that we're fed up with this and we don't think politics should be part of our workplace. Same kind of movement was on Facebook. So there are voices of opposition here. For now, they're not too loud, but organizations like FSU are helping them to succeed and be strong and to have a different perspective on things.
Okay, so Maria Rotenberg, your children are now part of Club Z. You also are helping. You're a parent who's involved in the club. Where do you see your children going what's their trajectory? What do you hope their trajectory is?
Well, I want them to grow to be decent human beings. And for me, Israel is part of it. I think they should not forget their Jewish identity in whatever way that is. They can be religious, they can be Zionist, whatever it is, but they should not forget where they came from and hopefully not forget that they're responsible for the state of Israel. I want them to personally feel that this is their own thing and be productive and successful in whatever they do.
Very good, very good. Thank you very much. Masha, last words. Let's talk about a little bit about the future of Club Z and Limud and this area. You are bringing together conferences. You have a yearly conference for Club Z teens.
Right. We started
again. Like, you want to write off teens. You know, like, teens, they're not, their minds are nowhere and they're not important, right? And like, it's kind of surprising what you're doing.
Yes and no. I think that teens are an incredibly powerful force, and they're capable of nuance. They're capable of understanding complex things. And they're also, this is when they're forming their identities. So I think this is the perfect time for them to really absorb this. Yes, I'm a Jew. That means I'm a Zionist. That means, of course, I'm going to stand up. Of course, I'm going to speak up. And the goal is simple. The goal is taking over the world. The goal is to have these kind of groups of teens that come together, learn together, and are being Jewish together about loving Israel. And then there's going to be a whole network of our alums.
I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah. Is this a West Coast thing? Is this a Bay Area thing?
No, I mean, this is where we're starting, but we're just starting. The goal is to open chapters all over the United States. Wherever people want us, we will come. And we do host an annual national conference that always takes place on MLK weekend. So it's in middle January. And we bring people from New York, Florida, Canada, Minneapolis, Michigan. Teens come from all over the North America to... It's so powerful because unlike many...
That sounds so awesome. If I remember being like in high school and stuff. If I had a weekend, where does it happen? Here?
This is actually happening in Silicon Valley, yes.
Silicon Valley, like a Zionist weekend in Silicon Valley as a high schooler, I would have been like...
Right.
I would have jumped on that plane in a second. It would have been
especially
amazing.
Especially if you're from New York or anywhere where it's cold.
Yeah, and it's just so cool. It's just such a cool gathering. And nothing like that existed in my time.
Well, nothing like this exists really anywhere. There are lots of conferences for teens, but none of them talk about Zionism and being proud and bring incredible, incredible speakers and let kids... ask challenging questions. There's no question of topic. Nothing is forbidden or, oh, we didn't talk about
taboo.
This. Exactly. Nothing
right.
is taboo. And these are the kids that live, again, they live in a culture of extreme political correctness and really extreme leftism that comes from everywhere at them. And so this is a breath of fresh air. Sorry. And they come back inspired and motivated.
It sets their mind it's a trajectory thing. It sets your mind on a trajectory. It gives you permission. It gives you permission to be passionate, by the way, about us, about our thing.
Absolutely.
Which is something that has been taken away a little bit. You see, there's a lack of passion in the reform conservative world and the regular Anglo world. And it's amazing and it's very inspiring. I want to thank you very much. And I hope that you get a lot of people to come out to your January conference. And that Club Z Teens really sweeps up America, takes over the world, and makes us what we're supposed to be, which is one family holding on to one another across the Atlantic. And here it's even further than it's you cross the Atlantic, and then you cross America.
Right.
And it's the furthest west. It's the furthest out west out there.
The wild, wild west.
Right, it's
here.
The wild west, and it's also 10 hours difference between here and Israel. It's like far away in a lot of ways. And just to the fact that you're going forward together with Maria and other people, other parents, and the fact that we are bringing teens here together to talk about Israel, which is on the other side of the world, it's an incredible resurgence, and that's also part of what's happening here at Limud FSU. I want to thank you again for getting me out here. It's been totally a pleasure for me. I've been thinking about my parents a lot, you know, and just seeing them kind of here, and thinking about heritage, you know, thinking about heritage and reconnecting to something that's mine, that's partially been lost, and I'm bringing something that has been lost to them. So it's been a lot of fun. I want to thank you very much, Masha. ClubZteens.org. ClubZ, like the letter, teens.org is your website. And folks, if you have a teenager out there and you want to inoculate them and send them on the path, do so now. Don't waste another minute because it's so, so easy to lose our kids. And the other side has been really a cradle robber, has been really stealing our children's minds. How many people have told me, I sent my son to Harvard for $50,000 a year. He came back hating Judaism and hating Israel. So I just paid a lot of money to destroy my son's soul and to disconnect him from our story. Don't let that happen to you, God forbid. Don't be one of those statistics. Be one of the statistics of the great resurgence. Masha, Maria, thank you very much. ClubZteens.org is the website. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ishai.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ishai.
Martyrdom does not end something, said Indira Gandhi. It is only a beginning. And for me, each episode is a new beginning, because I'm telling a story of the past set to build a present identity that's motivated to make the future of which we dream. I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Listen to The Jewish Story with Rav Mike Foyer on thelandofisrael.org.
www.aryabrahamwoods.com.